Welcome to Dark Corners with David Allan Voiles. Dark Corners is brought to you by Gestalt Media, an independent publishing company dedicated to serving independent artists. Dark Corners is a horror podcast and may not be suitable for all listeners. Therefore, discretion is advised. Season 2 consists of episodes written and narrated by David Allan Voiles, based on a story suggested by the Halloween-themed musical work Witch Works, created by dark ambient musician Mombi Uhlman. The 13th episode concludes the season in October of 2020. Chapter 12, Samhain City. Daniel opened his eyes and for a moment had no idea where he was. It took a while for his vision to focus in the darkness, but soon, thanks to the utility light which shone over the driveway, he realized that he was sitting in the Lazy Boy recliner in the living room of the house in which he had spent most of his life. He was back at the farm. He had no idea how he had gotten there, and a panic filled him as he remembered the last thing he had seen, Laura's life draining from her as blood streamed from her throat. He stood, obeying an urge to go somewhere, to do something, but he had no idea where to go or what to do. He stood in the living room with his hands pressed to his temples as if that would keep his sanity intact. Is this real? Am I dreaming? Was everything that happened on the hayride a dream? Maybe Laura's alive. He patted his jean pockets for his cell phone, but it wasn't there. Just his keys and his wallet. The car. Did I drive myself home? Daniel raced to the front of the house and looked through the screen door where the front door stood open. His car sat where he always parked it. Of course it's there. Why wouldn't it be? How else would I have gotten here? But where's my phone? And where's Laura? Daniel turned back to use the landline phone to call her when a low chuckle broke the silence. It's all real, laddie. Daniel whirled to locate the source of the voice he now knew all too well, but he saw no one in the gloom of the house. It's not a dream. Where's Laura? Daniel called out into the darkness. Ah, now that's a shame. The lass is gone. A sacrifice that had to be made. You killed her, you bastard! A necessary evil, my boy. Come out and show yourself, you fucking coward! I'm not hiding. Just the opposite. I'm right here with you. Closer than you could ever imagine. Daniel felt his skin crawl, even though he didn't really know what O'Bannon meant. He turned again and stepped out onto the front porch and gazed out to the east, toward Maria Bay. Yes, I want to show you something. As Daniel looked up the driveway, he felt the sensation he had experienced twice before in his dreams and visions, the feeling that he was moving without having taken a single step. It felt as if he were leaving his body, in fact, as if his spirit was simply traveling on its own. That's it, laddie. Just let go, and we'll take a little trip. It's like I'm watching video from a drone, he thought. His driveway raced beneath him. Soon he found himself on the highway following the familiar route into town. Although it was still night, he could make out every detail of the terrain that went by. When the sign welcoming travelers to Maria Bay came into sight, Daniel saw that someone had crudely brushed the words Samhain City with dark red paint over the name of the town. When Daniel came into the business area, his speed slowed to being not much faster than a brisk walk. Most of the tables and booths from the carnival were packed up, but as he floated by the shooting gallery, he saw the skinny attendant helping a young, dark-haired girl, a girl much too young to be out on her own and much too drunk to be aware even of where she was, into a dented van parked behind the hay bales. Daniel wanted to call out, but he could only watch as he continued to glide past the site. He found himself moving down the alley behind the shops on Church Street, and pausing, though not by his own volition, to watch as two teenaged boys, one with shaggy brown hair who wore a black t-shirt under a jean jacket with the sleeves cut off, and the other with a scraggly blonde goatee and a gray hooded sweatshirt, searching through the pockets of a man dressed in a dark blue business suit that was rumpled and torn. The man was lying on the wet pavement, his back up against the side of a dumpster, oblivious to what was going on. "Is he drunk?" Daniel wondered. "Did he pass out on his own, or did they jump him?" The boy in the sleeveless jacket opened the man's coat, which revealed a dark red stain still spreading on the white shirt. He reached into the inside pocket, pulled a wallet from the man's coat, and slipped a number of bills into his own pocket. He smiled at his friend, who grinned back, and then threw the empty wallet on the man's chest. The two boys looked up and down the alley, clearly not seeing Daniel, and jogged past him to disappear into the darkness. The atmosphere changed dramatically in the blink of an eye. Somehow, inexplicably, it was daytime, and Daniel found himself back out in the downtown district, being pulled toward the wooden double doors of St. Mark's Episcopal Church. The doors opened for him, although no one was there to work them, and Daniel glided down the center aisle of the sanctuary. A dozen people sat in the pews on either side, their faces intently watching a young couple dressed in their Sunday best, who held an infant in a white christening gown as they stood together with the minister at the baptismal font. As with the carnival attendant and the boys who had assaulted and robbed the man in the alley, no one in the church acknowledged Daniel's presence. Daniel would not have recognized the minister even had the cleric been at St. Mark's in Daniel's youth, for he had not been a regular at any church in Maria Bay. But the minister's face blurred as Daniel came to a stop just a few feet behind the couple. The face of the clean-shaven, robed man with black-rimmed glasses that Daniel had seen first shifted and flickered, changing with another face, that of an older man with dark hair slicked back over his skull and a pencil-thin mustache over thin lips. Back and forth, the faces changed, like photographs on flipped pages in a book, until finally settling on the face of the older man. That other face, my grandfather. The silver crosses on the minister's purple stole were suddenly upside down, and the stole itself had become a deep, rich red. Like blood, Daniel thought. The couple, who gave no sign that they had noticed a change in the minister's appearance, handed their child over to him. Jack Thompson grinned widely as he took the child and cradled it with one hand while he reached into a cabinet in the base of the baptismal stand and pulled out a long black-handled knife. The baby began to cry, and Daniel tried again to shout a warning, but he was no more able to scream than he was able to stop himself from suddenly gliding past the couple and out one of the doors beside the chancel and through an exit that emptied him onto a side street. Five or six sheriff's deputy cars were parked in the lot across from the back of the municipal building Daniel found himself approaching. A door that Daniel knew should be locked opened by itself, and he floated through the back entrance into the county sheriff's office building. To his left, a metal door with a thick pane of reinforced glass allowed him to see a hall of jail cells, but he glided on through another door that led to offices. Something moved in the open area before him at the end of the hall of offices, a glimpse of someone in a multicolored costume. A high-pitched giggle that seemed incongruous with the setting did not keep him from looking into the open rooms he passed. In one, a male deputy lay back in the chair at his desk, both arms hanging limply down beside his chair. Blood dripped from the neat hole in the middle of his forehead. Across the hall, in another office, a blonde woman, also in a gray uniform, leaned forward onto her desk, blood pooling on the papers under her head and from a gaping wound on the back of her skull. Daniel wanted to stop, to scream, to escape, to go back the way he had come in, to at least shut his eyes to the horrors he was seeing. But he continued to glide with eyes wide open as if trapped in a nightmare from which he could not awaken. In the last office, a man in a bear suit sat at the desk, grinning and waving a furry paw at Daniel as he passed. The hallway emptied into a larger, open area with several desks for clerical workers on his left, and a counter along the right side where citizens could approach the officer on duty. The bodies of two women in business suits slumped over their desks, while a third lay sprawled on the floor. Blood formed large puddles on the white and black tiled floor. Daniel floated out the main entrance to the building into the sunlight, where he witnessed mayhem on a scale he never could have imagined. A middle-aged man in a Maria Bay Pirates baseball hat picked up a bench in front of Wilson's Hardware and smashed the plate glass window. A woman in a white Suburban drove into the front of the First National Bank, smashing the glass front of the building as well as her head when she collided with the windshield. Two boys who appeared to be of middle school age were firing what Daniel thought at first to be BB guns from the shooting gallery at pedestrians who were jumping desperately into any store that was open. When Daniel saw an elderly woman with a walker collapse on the sidewalk, it registered that the gunshots were much louder than those made by an air rifle. Meanwhile, Daniel kept gliding. His speed increased, and he glided back onto the main road and then out onto the highway. Again, the daylight changed drastically. He watched the sun set before him as quickly as in a cartoon, and in an instant, it was night. Within moments, he was approaching his family's farm, but before he got to the driveway, he slowed and made a turn at the barn. Somehow, the scarecrow stand was back in place, and Stan Kobritz was on it. The blood from his mutilated body reflected in the moonlight. Stan raised his decaying head from the cross and grinned at Daniel as Daniel glided onto the path through the dried stalks of corn. The corn stalks swayed, and Daniel heard invisible things groaning as they crawled along the ground and through the leaves. When the cornfields ended, Daniel floated along the trail through the pumpkin vines. The smell of spoiled pumpkins was overpowering. They were rotting, but they still glowed with enough orange light to show their hideous, grinning, collapsed faces. Enough light to show that among the pumpkins were other heads, human heads, some that had been long dead and some much more recent. Still, Daniel glided out of the pumpkin swamp and into the woods. The giggling he had heard earlier in the sheriff's office came first from one side of the path and then the other, and he saw glimpses again of gaily colored costumes slipping among the pine trees as if following him on his way. Another high-pitched giggle, and he saw a ballerina on the ascending path before him, blocking his way. She reached up toward her plain white mask and took it off to reveal a face completely stripped of its skin. As Daniel got closer, she stepped aside enough to let him pass, but not so far away as to give him relief. He slowed, much to his dismay, as he pulled up beside her, and he saw the moonlight glistening on the wet red tendons of her face. Daniel could not help but look at her, and he shuddered as he realized she had no eyelids. She giggled again and leaned close enough for him to feel her rancid breath on his face. He felt her wet, bloody skin touch his as she gently kissed his cheek. The path opened up so that Daniel could see his destination, the Witch Works. It loomed before him black and dark against the huge full moon, appearing once again as it had before the fire. The large iron doors opened as he approached and entered. The hum of the machines filled Daniel's head so that he could hear nothing else. People sat at the machines as he had seen twice before, sewing dolls and toys while staring sightlessly straight ahead. They were bathed in deep tones of reds, greens, blues, and amber from the moonlight that shone through the stained glass above them. Their solid white eyes, totally without pupils or irises, glowed as they caught the moonlight that filtered through the few clear panes of glass mixed in among the jewel-toned panels. Daniel continued to glide slowly up the center of the factory. He looked up at the mezzanine for the familiar figure who often loomed there in his dreams and visions, but no one stood before the wooden doors. Is that where I'll end up? Daniel tried not to look at the figures who sat at their machines, but it was impossible not to see them. Judging from their dress, most seemed to be from the past, but some seemed ill-placed to be factory workers. A woman in a maid's uniform? A skinny blonde in a nightgown and robe? And then he noticed a man in a suit that was unmistakably Sidney Johnson. Across from him sat a very bloody Sheriff Kobritz. And then Daniel thought his heart would jump out of his mouth. Laura. She was still wearing what she wore on their hayride. A large raw wound crossed her throat, no longer bleeding, yet she stared straight ahead as she moved the fabric under the bobbing needle. It was too much to bear. With great relief, Daniel found he could finally close his eyes, and he felt his body rushing backwards at an incredible speed. With only a second's passing, he was back on his porch. Daniel opened his eyes and swayed on his feet. He reached out to the column to the right of the steps to steady himself. What was all that? Were those things that have happened, or only what might happen? An absurd image of himself as Ebenezer Scrooge kneeling on his grave and gripping the robe of the Ghost of Christmas Future filled his mind. He gave a humorless chuckle and shook his head. O'Bannon? Are you here? No answer. What? You're not in my head anymore? Still no answer. Or are you just waiting and watching? Silence. Daniel walked down the steps and out onto the driveway. I don't know what you're planning, old man, but I don't want to be a part of it anymore. Daniel continued to talk out loud as he walked to the barn. Are you getting your sick thrills by torturing me? Daniel pulled hard on both doors to the barn and allowed them to swing back and remain open. Enough moonlight shone through the entrance and the large opening on the upper level for him to be able to easily find a coiled rope that hung on the wall. He took it down and walked to one of the stalls where several bales of hay were stacked. What are you doing, laddie? Ah, so you are here, Daniel said. He sat on one of the large bales and began working with the rope, wrapping it to form a noose. I have great plans for you, Daniel. You'll have riches you've never even dreamed of, power that only a few men in this world have ever known. Daniel stood on the beam and threw the noose over the crossbeam above him and adjusted the noose so that it hung right before his face. He then stepped off the hay bale and tied off the other end to the nearest post. Once it was tightly secured, he stepped back up onto the bale and stuck his head through the noose. Think about what you're doing, Daniel. Is that fear I hear in your voice? Could the great and mighty wizard of the witchworks be afraid? We can do great things, Daniel. We'll build back the factory, and I'll show you wonderful things. Secrets of the universe that will give us such power. Don't throw all this away. Just think of how those simple fools who scorned you will smile and gloat when they hear how you ended your life. Do you really want to let them win? Will you let them take this land, your farm, your mansion, for their own petty pleasures? Images of his neighbors who scorned him when he and Laura had simply wanted to enjoy a simple meal together came to his mind. The vision of how the Jorgensons ignored his greeting played out again, although this time he noticed more distinctive grimaces on their faces. Then he saw the Phillips, who frowned when they saw him, whispering ugly comments to each other about him as they left the cafe. He saw again the waitress and Dave Walker talking as they looked at him, their faces drawn in disgust much more than he had remembered at the time. The looks of disapproval from the other people in the cafe when he had lashed out in anger at them played over in his mind, but now, in this vision, they also laughed in derision, spewing out bits of food as they gaped and pointed at him. Anger filled him. To hell with them. Daniel took his head from the noose and stepped down off the bale of hay. He walked to the entrance of the barn and looked out at the star-filled sky. A pleasant, warm wave rippled from the base of his neck down through his body and out his limbs all the way to the tips of his fingers and toes. His eyes narrowed, and his lips stretched into a fierce grin of joyful anticipation. He felt something rub against his leg. A black cat looked up at him, purring loudly, a hum that merged with the sound of many, many machines. That concludes our next-to-last episode of Witchworks and almost brings us to the end of our story. I encourage you to continue listening to the final chapter of Season 2, Episode 13, Leaves, an Epilogue. It's available right now. I think you may find it interesting.